Brexit gets done again. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Leanna Byrne. When the UK left the EU 3 years ago, it created a border problem in Northern Ireland. The answer to that was the Northern Ireland Protocol. I asked BBC's John Campbell to remind us what the protocol is and why it needed to be changed.
The island of Ireland is two states, Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK, and of course the UK has left the EU. The Republic of Ireland is an independent state and it is still part of the EU. Now, Brexit was going to mean new trade barriers, new trade borders between the UK and the EU. But that was a problem for the island of Ireland if there was going to be a new trade border along the land. And it is also an area of conflict, an area of real political sensitivity. So the UK and the EU, years ago, they agreed that whatever happens as a result of Brexit, there cannot be a new land border on the island of Ireland for these trade checks. So they decided instead that when goods arrive from other parts of the UK across the Irish Sea into Northern Ireland's ports, the trade checks would happen there. So that meant the border on the island of Ireland could remain free-flowing, but there were new checks and controls as goods entered Northern Ireland from other parts of the UK. This has not been straightforward for business. This means that Northern Ireland businesses, when they previously were getting goods from other parts of the UK, it was just a normal commercial transaction. But under the protocol, there was a whole lot of new paperwork. Everything coming in needed a customs declaration. Food products needed a whole new range of paperwork. There were actual physical checks happening on goods at Northern Ireland's ports. And this all adds cost and complexity.
So, John, what's in this post-Brexit deal? What's changed?
Fundamentally, what the UK and the EU want to do now is make that trade from other parts of the UK into Northern Ireland a whole lot easier. So the concept they have come up with is red lanes and green lanes. And that would be similar to what you see when you pass through customs at an international airport. And the idea would be that goods which are coming from other parts of the UK into Northern Ireland and are going to stay there and be consumed there, they would come through the green lane. They would never be subject to routine checks. The paperwork would be minimal. Goods which are due to cross the border into the Republic of Ireland and therefore into the wider EU, they would come through the red lane, meaning they would still be subject to checks and controls at Northern Ireland's ports. There are also various little side deals, if you like. So, for example, there was an outright ban on some trees and shrubs, seeds and seed potatoes coming from Great Britain into to garden centres or horticultural nurseries in Northern Ireland. That ban will now be reversed. There was also an issue to do with the labelling of medicines, pharmaceutical products. And, you know, in some ways you think, well, that's a trivial issue about, you know, the box in which, you know, a packet of aspirin or paracetamol would be in. But what the pharmaceutical industry was explaining was if we have to produce a separate package for Northern Ireland, it would be commercially unviable. And therefore, we would stop selling some medicines in Northern Ireland. The pharmaceutical industry seemed to be saying that all their issues around the protocol seemed to have been solved.
John Campbell, BBC Northern Ireland's economics and business editor, thank you for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
As John mentioned, the new deal will stop the ban on the movement of seed potatoes from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. Angus Wilson is the chair and founder of Wilson's Country, the largest potato processor in Northern Ireland.
For me, as a potato producer representing 20 growers in Northern Ireland, we're delighted that we can access the right varieties and the right quality and health status of the Scottish seed, which has obviously developed over the years. So this is good news for us, albeit we haven't read the detail in case there's any problem.
And Kieran Sloan owns Sawyer's Deli in Belfast. He's lost suppliers who've been put off by the red tape.
It would be great just to have our suppliers back again. We've been dealing with some of these companies maybe for 20 or 30 years, and they don't want to let us go just like that. This green lane thing works for me. I mean, certainly if there's less paperwork and we can just get back to the way it was, that would be amazing. I would love that.
Now let's get some numbers. A bit of a muted response after the initial post-Brexit deal uptick. The FTSE is actually down by 0.3%. But the pound got a bit of a boost today, up by 0.2% against the dollar. New figures are showing that nearly a third of workers in South Africa are unemployed. That's down very slightly, but regular power cuts known as load shedding aren't helping. The rise in energy costs is affecting sales, causing supply chain issues and forcing many businesses to close. The wine industry has been particularly hit hard. Our South Africa correspondent Vumani Mkhazi reports from the Cape Winelands.
It's harvest time at the Groetepoort winery. The rumble of tractors, the churning of the wine press, and the occasional bouts of laughter by the farm workers points to the busiest time of the year in South African winemaking.
What we've got over here is our Pinot Noir grapes, lovely quality grapes.
Yeah.
And this will be used in a Cup Classic, which is made in the exact same style as French champagne.
Peter Pins is the communications manager at Groetepoort. Unfortunately for the wine industry, harvest time also coincides with the worst power cut South Africa has ever experienced, with the country at times facing up to 10 hours a day without power.
It's the first day of harvest season, and all of this machinery behind me and the tanks inside are powered by electricity. So far this year, every day we've had load shedding, meaning this wine farm and others across the region are having to use expensive generators.
Groetepoort uses nearly $3,000 a month on expensive generator fuel. It's a cost, Peter says, the business has to absorb.
The entire harvesting process, the only place that we're not using power is when physically cutting the grapes. So worst case scenario, we are in deep trouble.
South Africa's wine industry is the eighth largest producer in the world, generating revenue of over $3 billion annually. For Christo Conradi from wine industry body Vinpro, amidst the power crisis, the show must go on.
You're in the midst of a season, you want to ensure a quality product, a quality harvest, so you don't have a choice. That is that you need to do to make sure in the next 12 weeks at least it's a quality product that we can harvest and make a quality product locally as well as for export utilities.
Across the rest of the South African economy, the impact of the rolling blackouts has been dire. Energy expert Lungile Mashile.
Studies actually indicate that our GDP growth could have been about 2% higher had it not been for load shedding in this country. Our unemployment is also one of the highest in the world. Then you have this compounding issue of load shedding, which has been with us for 16 years.
For winemakers and other sectors of the South African economy, there seems to be no light at the end of the tunnel, as power cuts are expected to continue for at least another 2 years.
The BBC's Vumani Mkhazi there. And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. If you like, you can email us at marketplace@bbc.co.uk. I'm Leanna Byrne, and thanks for listening.